This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. In 1990, the Americans with Disabilities Act offered up a host of protections for people with disabilities. It banned workplace discrimination, forced commercial spaces to become more accessible, but religious spaces were exempt from the ADA, so it's become a grim joke that bars and strip clubs are more accessible than churches, mosques, and synagogues. Mark Pinsky writes about religion. His new book is called Amazing Gifts. It's about faith communities and the disabled. And he joins me today, along with Brett Webb Mitchell. Brett is a Presbyterian minister living in Chapel Hill. He's written two books on the subject, Dancing with Disabilities and Beyond Accessibility. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Good to be here.
So what is this, Mark Pinsky, let me start with you, this matter of faith and disabilities. How are they connected in your mind, and what's the impetus for the book?
Well, I think they're connected because what I found in my research is that faith communities can fill in where government fails or is unable to help people. And they can lift up people who have disabilities. They lift up people who are caregivers for disabilities. And they can really enrich the lives of people with disabilities. And at the same time, their lives can be enriched by so doing. That was the sort of one of the big surprises for me in researching the book.
And part of the challenge here is in how you view disabilities, and the term itself is a kind of a prejudice once to even get the conversation started, right?
Well, I was instructed that one never says disabled people or the disabled because it objectifies and marginalizes people. It's always people with disabilities, and the sub-slogan is people first. And it's just a way of looking at people and dealing with people, and the unease that the majoritarian people have is okay. You can get over that unease. Don't be embarrassed or feel guilty about not knowing what to say or do.
That's part of the story. And then, Brett, the other part is so once we get over the discomfort is to realize that in some ways we are all disabled and that every member of this community, be it a church community or not, contributes in their own way.
That's right. And one of the things that where faith communities have been always hesitant in terms of welcoming people who live with disabilities is because they have seemed to be the other. They are not like us. They don't look like us. They don't sound like us. They don't, quote, act like us. And so there's always been a kind of sense of reluctance on many faith communities to be welcoming, let alone accepting or inclusive of people living with disabilities because of the sense of oddness or strangeness that a person might be or bring to a congregation. And that's always been the challenge.
Mark Pinsky, you have a number of stories, 64 stories in your book. One of them, I think, illustrates this way in which people contribute, not just are somehow having to be accommodated, but in fact contribute. Tell us the story of Lucas McCarty.
It's a fascinating story, and he's the subject of a book of his own by T.R. Pearson, a novelist. He's a young white man living in the Mississippi Delta, born with severe mobility issues, cerebral palsy. He has difficulty communicating. He makes sounds, but he's a very intelligent person inside that body. He was not happy at the sort of middle-class mainline church that his family worshipped at, but his grandfather is a catfish farmer. And he had an African-American employee who came to him and said, you know, I think Lucas would be happy at my church. So the grandfather said, be my guest. So the employee took Lewis to this Pentecostal church with a corrugated roof and falling down walls in the middle of a field. But it's Pentecostal, and so they embrace ecstatic forms of worship. So the fact that Lucas fell sometimes, that he shouted sometimes, made him typical rather than unusual. And he loved the place. The congregation embraced him. They were full of people with their own senses of brokenness, addiction issues, incarceration issues. And he said he found a home. And he said, you know, I'm white on the outside, but I'm black on the inside. And here was a case where a confluence of worship styles and good feeling embrace this person and enrich this person.
But this is clearly a case of how we come to identify with people. What Brett was talking about earlier, seeing people as other because we define ourselves in terms of those abilities rather than see what we have in common apart from.
Okay, I'm part of the baby boom cohort, as you are and many of your listeners are. Well, we have two choices coming up for us, old and dead. And those of us who remain old will soon be facing issues of vision, hearing, mobility, and in my case, occasional mental fuzziness. And this cohort is aging into infirmity. So although we may have been normal and able-bodied so far, if we stick around, we're going to be that way. And we're going to be part of this demographic wave, which will now include, in addition to us, returning veterans from the two wars with PTSD, with hearing and seeing issues, with amputation issues. In addition, the third stream of people coming into the houses of worship will be people now in their 20s who were born with severe birth defects, but because of advances in neonatal technology, they're surviving. So between the war veterans and the neonatal survivors and the baby boom, there's a huge demographic wave which is going to be lapping at the steps of our houses of worship and faith communities. So particularly those mainline churches that have empty pews, they can do well by doing good, by making their congregations welcoming and accessible.
And, Brett, it's more than just assimilating those people into the pews. It's understanding the value and the absolute gifts that they bring that no one else can bring to their community. I mean, that's part of what you're saying.
Sure. To go back to the point that Mark just raised, the issue of pews. pews are a rather recent invention. They were created, interestingly enough, by the Protestant reformers. Before that, the churches never had pews. So the issues of accessibilities pre-Reformation was kind of a moot point, since anyone who wanted to wheel themselves in or bring a loved one with them, it was no problem in terms of accessibility. The priest would speak in Catholic in Latin, and what would happen was people were entertained more by the stained glass windows as well as by sculptures. So I think that the issue of accessibility and inclusion falls down to or comes to the issue of communication. How do we celebrate? How do we communicate? How do we express the faith, as you were sharing with Lucas' story? And that's where the issue of inclusion will finally, I think, break through once we are able to communicate and express the faith together.
You've talked about and written about the fact that even before you became a minister, you were interested in the way that people who are disabled come to know God.
Sure.
What do you mean? Why? What is that interest?
Well, a short story. I was a music therapist before I became a Presbyterian minister, and it was my experience as a music therapist where I was working at the Hospital for the Mentally Retarded in Georgetown, Delaware, that I always had to create, this was part of the responsibilities, a small little choir of young people with severe or profound intellectual challenges and multiple disabilities. And churches would not allow us to come on Sunday morning during, quote, regular worship at 11 o'clock, the most segregated hour in probably American churches, but they would allow us come on Wednesday night. And the issue was, well, we won't let you come on Sunday morning because they won't understand what's going on. And what was fascinating about that, and this is in fact what led me to go to seminary, was how does one communicate, how does one know the holy when one is not able to access language or process language? And in the case of many of the mainline churches, as well as Catholic churches, happen to be more language-based and more bent on writing and reading, if you will, than on communicating in ways that I would say are more creative and imaginative.
Yeah, and Mark Pinsky, you have another story in your book, the story of Susan Gregg Schroeder, that I think illustrates some of what Brett's talking about in terms of communication and how we come to understand disability and the inability of some churches to talk openly about disability.
Yes, we have one of the other things that I've learned is that there are disabilities which are called non-casserole disabilities, which means if you have a visible disability or a visible crisis, people in the church will come and bring casseroles to you. But if you have mental, intellectual, psychological issues that are not visible, you don't get a casserole. People don't come to your house. And the story of Susan Gregg Schroeder and others is of someone who experienced emotional difficulties and came to grips with them. And in some cases, coming to grips with them led people to career changes to go into the ministry. A lot of our stories in Amazing Gifts deal with people who have, through their disability, come into ministry, or either individual pulpit ministry or to creating parachurch organizations. But the one thing that I really learned from researching is that it's not a matter of money. The people in the disability community say, never start with elevators, because that ends all discussions. But I found that programs, attitudes, and policies, which can cost very little, can have a huge impact. If your congregation has people with Down syndrome in them who want to participate, there are congregations that invite people with Down syndrome to be greeters. Simply by being greeters sends a message to anybody who walks through that door that this congregation values people with disabilities.
You both have written about L'Arche, the L'Arche community founded by Jean Vanier in France. Tell us about L'Arche and how it bears on some of these questions. What example it sets?
Well, the residential communities. I'll defer to Brett, but they're residential communities all around the world, and they at the core is spirituality, and the discussions of spirituality, and bringing people to worship services, and making them feel valued. And it's been an amazing success. And Brett wants to say a little bit about L'Arche.
Sure. I think it's been successful because, fascinatingly enough, it began during the 1960s, during to go back to baby boomer language, the commune rage. Mm-hmm. And everyone was into creating these wonderful communes. And that's why Jean Vanier, invited by a Catholic priest friend, Père Thomas, to come. And he became good friends with people living with disabilities, two men with intellectual challenges. At the core of L'Arche, what's novel about L'Arche is that they emphasize relationships. So as Mark was saying, spirituality, and the other thing that I would add is relationships, that relationships both among those whom the world would identify as living with a disability as well as people living non-disabled, or as Reynolds Price sometimes would say, temporarily able-bodied. Because the fact is, as Mark was saying, alluding to earlier, sooner or later, the older we grow, there will be something that we are not able or capable of doing that we can do today. So the beauty of L'Arche is really not about equal rights. It really is about the relationships between assistant, about who is non-disabled, and the person who lives with a disability.
And it seems to me, too, an important story that bears on the question of L'Arche and its ideas about disability is the story of Nancy Eisland and the idea of the fact that unless you understand the defeat for Christians, and you have stories in here about mosques and temple and synagogues as well, but in Christian understanding, that unless you understand the defeat of the cross, you really don't quite get the triumph of the cross. And so maybe you can tell us Nancy's story.
Well, this was a young woman who experienced disability in her life, but who had an academic bent, and wrote some of the seminal works of disability and theology. And she's the one person who had passed away before I began writing the book, but everyone in the disability community told me that in order to understand it at a somewhat higher level, a more fundamental theological level, I had to read her book, which I did. And in a way, through the clips, which we don't usually like to do in a book, because she was gone, so we had to include her in the way that she came to understand for herself and for American theologians the nature of disability and how it affects one's spiritual life.
The name of the book is Amazing Gifts. I'm talking to Mark Pinsky. He is here as well as Brett Webb Mitchell, who's written a couple of books on this topic himself. You dedicate the book, Mark, to Reynolds Price.
Yes, I knew Reynolds Price 45 years ago as an undergraduate and was kind of in awe of him then and remain so. And it gave me great gratitude when my son was a Duke undergraduate and took Reynolds' Milton Seminar, one I never would have qualified for. But Reynolds didn't write a whole lot about disability until later in his life, except through example. If you look at his output, the works that he did before he became paralyzed and after, there was a huge surge of work that came in the second part of his career after he became paralyzed. He never wanted to associate those two things together. He did not want to do that. But he was an inspiration to me. I used to sit in on his classes, and he was just by example rather than by – he showed, he didn't tell like any great writer did. He showed by his professional life that a disability would in no way hamper his creative life.
And his religion and spirituality were
absolutely
very important to him.
He turned that way because, I think, of what happened.
Brett Webb Mitchell, in your book Beyond Accessibility, I think you give some advice to churches on how they can become more open and accessible.
I do. I think that again, to go back to L'Arche as an example, the first thing is to create relationships and not to assume that there is a one-size-fits-all approach to becoming more accessible or inclusive, but that you really have to be mindful of, aware of, engaged in conversation with those people, those congregants, as well as those who are looking for a church or a mosque or synagogue in ways that you can be more welcoming. So it's always got to begin with a relationship. That will give you guidance in terms of how to be more welcoming, how to shape a congregation's life so that it is more inclusive, so that it fits the needs of the people there, as well as those who might be in the community itself, in the wider community. To go back to what Mark said, to begin with an elevator is not a wise idea.
Not a good idea. Mark Pinsky, you've been writing about religion for a long time. What was it like to frame a religious discussion, a religious thought in this way? And were there any surprises for you along the way?
I think there were. I think the notion that people with disabilities are enriched by an embracing faith experience and embracing faith community was what I expected. But the enrichment that they provided to people who helped them, that was a particular way of doing it. And I have to say that with so many stories, I tend to take the subject I read about very personally. And so I must admit, I had to find a kind of emotional middle distance. Otherwise, I felt like I'd be paralyzed by every story. And since much of what we did was through email, although we did some face-to-face, we did some phone, email, we were all equal. The dialogue was between equals, and that I found revelatory.
Mark Pinsky, thank you so very much for being on the program. Good to have you. Brett Webb Mitchell, good to have you as well. Brett Webb Mitchell, Presbyterian minister and writer based in Chapel Hill. He's written several books, including Dancing with Disabilities and Beyond Accessibility. Mark Pinsky is a religion writer. His new book is called Amazing Gifts. He reads tonight, 7 o'clock, the Regulator Bookshop in Durham.
Accessible
upstairs.
And it is accessible at the Regulator in Durham, 7 o'clock at the Regulator. That's the State of Things for today. We are at stateofthings.org. Thank you for listening to the program. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.